Thanks for joining us today to hear our latest Hope Central podcast. We trust this message will help you know more about Jesus and inspire you to be more like him.
Happy birthday to me. Happy birthday to me. Are you supposed to be saying happy birthday? Maybe it's staying alive. No, hang on, that's cardio. I don't remember. But we're doing a lot of hand washing these days, aren't we? There's so much that we try to do at the moment to try to keep ourselves safe. You know, we've got soap, we've got hand sanitizers, we've got masks, we've got gloves. All of these things that we do are to keep our bodies safe. The question is, what about your heart? I mean, it's not just your body that's being affected right now. You might not even know that. But deep down in your heart, things are going on. The virus, the coronary virus, is affecting what you believe, how you think, how you reflect on God and His purpose and place in your life. Are you protected in your heart? Maybe that's what we need to be talking about. You are being led right now. In this moment, you are being led. As we've been looking at all this year, that we have a life in the Spirit, and the Spirit is actually leading us at this moment in our lives. Galatians 5:25, if we live by the Spirit, let us keep in step with the Spirit. The Holy Spirit wants to lead you right now in your heart in a very good way. There's a lot of things happening in the world right now, and a lot of things are going to continue to happen. You need God. You need Jesus to help you through these moments. And one of the things that He speaks to us about is not necessarily just about the outside things happening in the world. Surely you need to get advice about health and safety and security and finances and so many things. But it's not just about the things. It's not just about the world. It's also about you and the most tender part of you, the part of you that really makes life's choices and decisions. In Proverbs chapter 4, verse 23, he says, beware the coronary virus. Or that he says, keep guard of your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the issues of life. Out of your heart, the very most inside part of you, is where you are interpreting life, where you are deciding what things, not just what happens, but what they mean to you. What do they relate to, and how do they impact my life? What are the messages that I'm received from that? Our hearts are shaped by our experiences and what we believe about them. It's not just the things that happen. It's about how we interpret them, how we understand them. Have you ever heard that saying, once bitten, twice shy? Meaning that if we have this terrible experience in life, a real bite, then we become twice as reserved as we were towards that thing. We don't take the same risks. We don't move in the same way. Now, why is that? Why is it that people learn so much about their experiences, and then those experiences and what we learn from them continue to repeat in the decisions and the actions that we take afterwards? Well, that's what we're going to be talking about today. Today, we're going to be talking about what do we need to guard our hearts from? What do we need to, inside, protect ourselves from to know that this is happening to us, happening to our hearts, so that we are ready and equipped to listen to the Holy Spirit, get His advice, and let Him both protect and shape our hearts through this moment. You know, there's this moment where Jesus is leading the disciples. And you know, the disciples are just like us. They're just regular people. They're not perfect in any way. And they're also being impacted by the life that they've lived, the experiences that they've had. And Jesus has to turn these regular people into people who see truth, see life, see Him through a whole new lens. So after they have this sort of issue about, you know, Jesus miraculously providing bread, the disciples get into the boat and they've only got this, you know, one loaf of bread. In Mark chapter 8, it says that they begin discussing with one another the fact that they had no bread. And Jesus, aware of this, said to them, why are you discussing the fact that you have no bread? Don't you yet perceive or understand? And then he says this, are your hearts hardened? Having eyes,
you don't see, and having ears, you don't hear. And don't you remember? Now, Jesus is going to make a very important point. The disciples are talking about, they think that Jesus is criticizing the fact that they only have one loaf of bread. But Jesus is saying, where were you guys? If you don't know, they've just come out of a story of feeding 4,000 people with 7 loaves of bread. And Jesus has to remind them after this. He said, listen, I fed 5,000 people with 5 loaves of bread. We've just filled 4,000 with 7 loaves of bread. Why do you think that I'm worried about how much bread you have? And then he points to the issue beneath the surface. It's not what you have. It's not what's happening. It's how you perceive it. And he says, you guys, all of these things I've been doing, your hearts were hardened. You didn't hear it. You didn't see it. You didn't understand. So the number one thing that we have to guard our hearts from is we need to guard our hearts from fear. Now, I know a lot of people right now are saying, oh, I'm not afraid, I'm okay. Other people are going crazy. They go over the top. I want to talk about fear in a sort of a different way maybe than you've thought about. You know, every promise from God always comes with two options. It's always a response of faith or fear. If you remember Abraham, one of the great early leaders, patriarchs of the Israelite people and of our faith, in Genesis 15:1, God speaks to Abraham, says, after these things, the word of the Lord came to Abraham in a vision and said, fear not, Abram, I am your shield. Your reward shall be very great. Now, why does Abraham need to hear that? Well, his journey is not an easy one. He's wanted to have a child for years and hasn't been able to. His own sort of sense of security in a land that he didn't grow up in is very uncertain. In fact, he's just come back from having to fight a war. And in that war, he ends up rescuing his nephew and he does great things. And you'd think, well, that just is sort of this, you know, perfect sense. Abraham's super confident. It's actually not. And Abraham needs to hear from God saying, Abraham, you don't need to worry because I'm with you and I'm promising you things. I'm speaking to you right now. And the fact that Abraham listens to God is what defines the next chapters of his life. It's not like later on the Israelites are having this, they're moving out of slavery. So it's hundreds and hundreds of years later. They're moving out of slavery and they're moving into the promised land. And God says to them, go for it. Help yourself. Take over this great land that I'm giving you. But then the people send spies into the land and they come back with this impression that it's impossible. They say, there's giants in the land. We can't do it. There's no way. You know, these people will kill us. And Joshua, one of the spies, one of the ones that doesn't see the negatives, isn't filled with fear, says to them in Numbers 14:9, he says, don't rebel against the Lord. Don't fear the people of the land. They're bread for us. Come on, this is our meal. Their protection is removed from them. The Lord is with us, so don't fear them. And then God speaks to Moses about these people's reaction. And the Lord, his summary is, he makes a different connection. The Lord says to Moses, he says, how long will these people despise me? Like, why do they not love me and love themselves and their own point of view on life? And how long will they not believe in me in spite of all the things that I've done? Like, again, it's like hearts are hardened by fear, not letting us see life in the proper lens because of the experiences. Those hundreds of years of slavery in Egypt have obviously changed the way these people see God and see life. And even though they see huge miracles, they still can't let go of the old paradigm, the old way of seeing things. See, fear has shaped them so that they can't be alive to God now. You know, every generation is shaped by its experiences. I don't know if you're familiar with these terms that we use now for the generations. You know, at first we had this long generation from 1928 to 1945. I'll tell you the name of that one in a second. But then here's some more familiar terms. You've heard of the baby boomers. Those are all the people that were born in the post-war time. Those are the people that never fought in the war. The parents did. But they're born in this huge explosion of babies, which is why it's called the baby boomers. But then The children of those people are called the baby busters. They have this unlimited opportunity. See, in the post-war boom, huge amount of industry opens up, technology, innovation, a lot of it done because of the war. But now it's hitting the marketplace. Jobs are going crazy. And the children of those people live in an era of huge prosperity compared to their grandparents. And then Generation X, my generation, it enters that world with almost unlimited options. And so they kind of throw away all of the boundaries. You know, that's where people are experimenting with everything. And technology begins to emerge in our culture. And then, of course, Generation Y is the one that takes advantage of that. The technology explodes around them. They don't even know what it's like to not have computers and not to have all of the internet and all of the ways that we now connect and communicate to one another. And then there's the millennials. They are sometimes called Generation Z. You know, the people born from 1998 and on, people who were born into this current millennium. Well, those people are split into two groups because the thing happened as those people were growing up. That's the global financial crisis or the world credit crisis, or Australians call it GFC. That shapes the way that those people are. Would you believe, or would you know that the millennial people are actually less financially risk averse than the generations before them? They're also not buying things like the people that went before them, including the big assets of houses and property and businesses. They're kind of shocked by their experience, which was they saw their parents go through massive financial hardship. And so it changed the way that they view the world. But you know, the generation that was before all of those ones, let me show you the name of that generation. It was called the Silent Generation. It's going to be hard to think about, but imagine growing up in the Great Depression, massive crop failures, a huge amount of people around the world unemployed. For an agrarian society, people who worked farmland, it was the most devastating time for them. Then they had World War II, where this insane amount of military machinery develops around them, and you just feel powerless. And then we enter the nuclear age, where the nuclear bomb goes off, and people start to think about their life and about reality in a whole new way that they've never thought of before. And then, of course, the outcome of that is the Cold War, which put everybody on guard. You know, they call them the Silent Generation because people during that generation just didn't speak up. They didn't try to change things. I mean, if you grow up in the sense of powerlessness, you just think you can't change anything. And then if, you know, sort of society clamps down on expression because of the Cold War, you just start slowly putting up these barriers around yourself, and you just don't express yourself. That generation is called silent. And you know, you probably heard stories about these people of this time, how they, you know, oftentimes just hoarded things. They lived, you know, simply. Even today when they had more, they refused to sort of be liberal with it because there was just this sense of, we don't know what's going to happen. They were closed. But not everybody was like that. You know, that time also forged two, I think, of greatest things that happened around the world. One was the civil rights movement emerged. It showed its face later, but the people who were at the center of it, people like Martin Luther King Jr., these people's sense of themselves and of what is right and about the power that they had in God by His Word transformed the way that they saw life, and they were not silent, not at all. In fact, they were speaking up more than ever. In the same generation that shaped the people who did nothing and said nothing, these people were shaped to shout. Then on top of that, they also had people like Billy Graham. Now, he emerged out of that generation of people who had it so tough. But did he go silent? Not a bit. In fact, his voice went louder and louder and louder and louder. And not just him, but many thousands of Christian leaders and missionaries and evangelists arose and emerged at that time because they were not shaped negatively by that experience. Instead, they heard the voice of God and they became powerful. I mean, the question is for you and I, is what are we letting this moment shape us in? Are we becoming slowly, slowly, slowly? Is this moment, this COVID-19, the coronavirus, is it gonna shape our children to be fearful about life? Are they going to become closed? Are they going to become less able to hear God and obey? Let's not let it happen. Let's let God's Spirit protect our heart. Let God's Word guide us. Let His promises remain in us. So that rather than becoming smaller, you know, I had my brother visiting recently, and he had his young son with him, Anthony. And Anthony was asking questions. He's 5 years old, and he's asking his dad questions about, what's this virus? What does it mean? And my brother very wisely just answered him in a way that kept his sense of personal safety, his sense of that the world's not collapsing, it's not, that there is answers for things, and guided him through that. But I'm wondering about this. What are your children hearing and learning from this moment? What are the young people hearing and learning? What are they going to think about this moment later in life? Let's remember that right now there is not just like a message of be afraid, but there's a message of change in the way that we fundamentally believe about ourselves and God. And let's guard our hearts from fear. And let's become like Billy Graham, somebody who actually goes forward in a time when everyone else is restricting. Now, the second thing I want to talk about today was we need to guard our hearts from bitterness, because so many things are going to happen that maybe didn't happen to other people, aren't happening to other people, didn't happen to our parents' generation or whatever. And there's a real sense that we can become bitter inside of our hearts from these experiences. Now, Hebrews chapter 12 says, "See to it that no one fails to obtain the grace of God, and that no root of bitterness springs up and causes trouble, and by it many become defied." This sort of negative, I lost my job, everything went bad, I don't know what I'm doing, those sorts of experiences can create this real sense of bitterness. Why me? Why is this happening? And our hearts can become corrupted, and that leaks onto other people. But we need to remember the context of this verse. It's all about discipline. It's all about learning that the hardships of life can be a way that God can shape and grow us. And so Hebrews chapter 12, verse 6 says, "For the Lord disciplines the one he loves, and he chastises the sons that he receives." Every son that he receives. What he's trying to say is that discipline and hardship are not abnormal, and they should not cause us to become bitter. Bitterness is almost a choice. It's not just you're experiencing pain, it's how you interpret that pain. You can interpret it in light of, hey, this is good for me. This will shape me. This will help me grow. This is helping me get my compass adjusted right. Or you can become very angry, very upset, and close down to the moment that God is speaking to you. And I had this experience, showing this little picture of this car. It's an Austin Mini rolling over. And just to give you an image of, you know, years ago when I was in Bible college, I was on a long trip driving between my hometown of Kelowna, to Vancouver, and going up a long hill. The car started to overheat, and so I turned it around on the road. It was a very, very steep hill. And then I started coasting down. Dumb. I don't know why I thought this, but I shut the engine off to save it. That was a good idea. But then I pulled the keys out of the ignition. Now, what you are thinking, if you know anything about cars right away, is, well, then the steering locks. Yeah, that's what happened. So I was racing down this hill coasting, and I was going one corner, and everything was great. And then I went around this other corner. I was probably going 100 kilometers an hour. And I realized in a split second I couldn't turn my wheel to straighten out. So I went off the road. I screamed, "Jesus." I went off the road, and I hit the bank, and I flipped my car 3 times. I landed on its wheels, and every single part of the car was crushed in some way. The roof, the sides, the front, the back, everything. It was even really wild. And I remember sitting in the car at that moment and thanked God I was alive. I was like, God, this is so, this is a miracle. I'm so grateful. And I was full of gratitude in my heart. I got out of the car and the window was smashed. I climbed out and I just looked at the car and said, God, you're amazing. And I worshiped. I'm so grateful. But I can tell you this. It didn't stick. You know, I lost my car. It took me, you know, a whole day to get my car picked up by the tow truck and driven home. And then I thought about all the money that I'd lost. And then I had to buy a different car and I had to do a bunch of work to it because I had no money. So I had to fix it and spent days, you know, putting a new head on it. And and over all of that hardship time, my gratitude turned to bitterness. And I was saying to God, why? Why is this happening to me? I'm trying to serve you. You know, at the time I was going to Bible college and working for Teen Challenge and I was upset. And then this verse came to me. John 15, 1 and 2, it says, I am the true vine and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. And every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes so that it may bear more fruit. And what God pointed out to me in that time was this, that it's the branch that does bear fruit, he prunes. It's not the ones that aren't. So in some ways, trials and difficulties are a compliment. They're saying, hey, I like what I see. I'm glad you're growing in this way, but let me trim, let me snip, let me guide, let me make you more than just this product of the world, product of your life, product of your experiences that you are now. Let me shape you. And that's what God spoke to me, saying, be grateful. This is actually a compliment. I like what I'm seeing. That's why this is happening. Changed my mindset, and I went away from bitterness, which was going to destroy me, and into gratitude. The third thing I wanted to say today is you got to guard your heart from judgment, because the coronavirus and its impact on the world and the way that things are happening is going to have winners and losers. There's going to be people not touched by it. There's going to be people don't get sick. And then strangely, this other people that are going to go through things. And now here's what I noticed, and you might be like me, I don't know, maybe I'm just bad. Have there been people you've seen on TV or seen happen that have gotten sick from the coronavirus that you just kind of went, yeah, fair enough. Yep. Or they deserved it. And that's what happened to me. I got to admit, when I saw that Harvey Weinstein had gotten the coronavirus, and if you don't know, person that's done, sexual predator, convicted from it, is, you know, been terrible. I kind of, yeah, fair enough, you know, he deserves it. And then I kind of thought God speak to me and say, no, that's not what I'm like. It's not like that. You know, Jesus said, be merciful, even as your Father is merciful. Judge not, and you will not be judged. Condemn not, and you'll not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it'll be measured to you. So Jesus is saying that the way you think about this world, like deserve and don't deserve, is actually not true. If you want to be honest, nobody deserves anything from God that's good. But Jesus said, look at the way I'm living. He said, I'm healing people who are bad. I'm giving the undeserving things. You know what I'm doing? I'm showing mercy. I'm not judging them. I'm giving to them. I'm forgiving sins, even for people who didn't ask for it. So the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom that Jesus rules over, is a kingdom of love and mercy, not of judging who's worthy and who's not worthy. In fact, that is kind of corrupting to our hearts, and it leads us to a place of judgment and unforgiveness. Jesus said, no, let them go. But you know what's going to happen is the mercy that you show is what you're going to receive. It's what you're going to live in. It's what you're going to understand. And if you judge people, you'll feel judged all the time. If you condemn people, you'll feel condemned all of the time. And not only just some, but a lot. Whatever happens, it's going to be pressed down, shaken together. Do you want good things, mercy poured into your lap, or judgment poured into your lap? Jesus says it's kind of up to you. So we need a different mentality about when other people experience painful or difficult things. It's not about deserving. You know, in fact, we should never even rejoice in it. Proverbs chapter 24, verses 16 to 18 says, for the righteous falls seven times and rises again, but the wicked stumbles in times of calamity. But even then, you're not supposed to go, well, look at me, I must be good because I got up again. No, he says, don't rejoice when your enemy falls, and let not your heart be glad when he stumbles, lest the Lord see it and be displeased and turn away his anger from him. You see, God is saying, you can't get yourself involved in this sort of judging and deciding who's good and bad. Boy, I'm glad that God spoke to me about that, because I don't want to be the kind of person who's looking around the world through a lens of she deserves it and he doesn't, or he's the one that ought to get it and she's the one, I feel sorry for her because she got it. That's not what life's about. Be merciful. Look through the lens of mercy. So as we finish today, there's this Psalm 139, where the psalmist, the whole psalm is about the presence of God and how we can't escape from him. And that's not something we want to escape from. But God being with us is what we really need right now. And the knowledge that he sees us no matter where we are, and he's formed us and he understands us. But at the end of the psalm, because of this great sense of God's love for him, the psalmist wants to have a better heart. He wants to be a better person. He wants to be uncorrupted. And so he prays this prayer for God to do like a virus check on his heart. You see the coronavirus, you know, test kits. They've got this probe that you kind of stick in their mouth and scrape away at the inside of your mouth, get a little bit of a picture of the viruses or bacteria that's in your body, and then they go away and test it. But it's that probing that lets us know whether we've got something. Psalm 139, 23 and 24 says, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me, and know my thoughts. And see if there's any kind of grievous or painful way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting." It's a great prayer for us to finish on. And this is what you should do just now. Just take a time with God, maybe read that psalm, and then just pray that prayer and let God speak to you. Is there anything about what's going on that's putting a painful or wrong picture in your heart? Let God reveal it to you. He's not going to accuse you. And remember this, that through Jesus Christ, we become new beings. We become new creations. We are born again. Let the new and living work of Jesus be at work in you to create in you a clean heart, to change your inmost being, so that these other things that are being pressed on us in this corrupt world we live in, they don't become part of our hearts. Guard your heart and let God heal it. God bless you. Looking forward to talking to you next week again. See you then.
Hey, Hope Central family, I want to say thank you for tuning in with us today. Or if you're just joining with us online, thanks a lot for listening in and being part of our message today. Please keep connected with us. We know it's a really unusual time that we're in, but remember that God is with you. We're with you. We love you and we're thinking about you. And we look forward to seeing you next week. Bye for now.
We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. And if you would like to know more about our service times, locations, or to subscribe to our podcast, head over to our website, hopecentral.org.au, for any further information.